This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow night, a new reality TV show called Black White debuts on the FX cable network. Two families, one black, one white, move in together for 6 weeks. And with the help of remarkable cutting-edge makeup, they trade races. They go out into each other's worlds to learn what it's like in someone else's skin. In one scene, the black mother becomes white and joins a focus group of white people to talk about race relations. In another, the white daughter becomes black and attends a poetry workshop with other young black people. And in this scene, the two fathers take a stroll through an upscale shopping district in Beverly Hills. The white father goes as a black man. The black father goes as himself. Afterwards, they talk about what they saw.
You know what I think? I think from your reaction today, you're looking for it.
I'm not looking for it. You know a snubbing.
I get snubbed now, too. But you and I, this evening, saw the same things. Mm-hmm. I saw one thing, you saw another. When a family is covering the entire sidewalk and they move over so that we can get by, you see that as them getting out of the way because you're black. You're looking for something that I think isn't there.
You're thinking that everything is okay, and it's not.
If you come into a place and you've got this resentment and this mm-hmm. expectation of prejudice, it's gonna find you. If you go in with an open heart and love, and you know, you can laugh. But my life is, I get joy because I put joy out. Mm-hmm. I don't get, you know, suspicion because I'm not looking for it. Mm-hmm. I'm not coming at it with a chip on my shoulder, and that's what I get back from the world.
That was Bruno Marcortulli, a 47-year-old white teacher from Santa Monica, and Brian Sparks, a 41-year-old African-American computer network specialist from Atlanta. In a moment, they'll join us to talk about their experiences. Later in the program, we'll remember baseball great Kirby Puckett, dead of a stroke at the age of 45. But first, black-white. If you have questions about what it was like to cross the racial divide, what these two men may have learned, or what we can learn from watching them, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. And joining us now from our bureau in New York are Brian Sparks and Bruno Marcortulli. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hey, Neil.
Thank you for having us.
It must have been interesting after you guys lived together for 6 weeks last summer and now joining together on this publicity tour together again.
Together again.
Yeah. Well, we've seen actually a lot of each other through this public relations situation before the show airing.
Mm. Tell us about that first moment of seeing yourself as the other, if you will. What was it like? Brian, you first. What was it like to suddenly see yourself as a black man? As a white man, rather.
Very different. Very different to come out and see how white I looked in the makeup. It was a great experience, but very different.
Was it convincing? Did you convince yourself?
It was very convincing. Was not around a mirror and walked past a mirror and it startled me. It looked so white. I looked so white.
Mm-hmm. Bruno, did you have the same reaction?
I ran to a mirror and made friends with my my new companion. No, it was a lot of fun to see me with a whole new face. The makeup was incredible. And truly transformed me completely.
Mm. Now, there was a lot of screening. You guys had, I guess, be screened to go through this. What did you go in expecting, Brian?
I went in expecting that racism was like in a corporate level as opposed to prevalent in society, as I later found out that it was. So just pretty much that.
And Bruno?
What did I expect when coming into the project?
Yeah.
Really, I had no idea what to expect. I just knew that it was a provocative conversation, mm-hmm. and I was thrilled to be a part of it.
And but clearly, as we heard from that clip, you had some expectations about that you were going to see things, that you hoped to see things that weren't there.
Who are you speaking to?
To you.
I hoped to see things that weren't there.
Maybe I phrased that inelegantly and almost certainly did. That you were convinced that other people were seeing things that weren't there and that, in a sense, by becoming black, you could prove it.
Okay. I'm not sure I agree with that. Let me preface what I'm going to say by saying that there obviously has been, is currently, there is racism in the world, and there will be. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll ever go away. But the point I was making from that clip that you took is, I think a great deal of what we see in life, our perceptions, are based on what we expect to see. And I'm a big believer in that, not to negate racism, but you get back from the world which you put out. When I go outside and I feel lousy about myself, I get a different reaction from everyone that I meet than I do when I feel great about myself. So it really, there is some validity to the in my mind to you do get out, get back from the world what you put out.
Mm-hmm. And Brian, I know that your viewpoint is different.
It's very different. What I think that Bruno failed to realize that he can go out on his lousiest day, white, and the world is still receptive to him, more receptive to him as if I went out on my best day, black. And I think that that's what he's not seeing there.
Some of the most telling points in the film are little ones. Brian, you, for example, go in as a white man to buy some golf shoes. tell us a little bit about that experience.
That was a great experience. It was my first day shopping as a white guy, of course. I go in and to buy some golf shoes, and the guy literally takes a shoe, opens his shoe, unlaces it, grabs my foot, puts a shoehorn in the back of the shoe, and slides my foot into the shoe. So it was a great feeling. It was a great, very great experience. I've never had that shopping as a black guy.
Mm-hmm.
Neil, nor have I. I've never had anyone put my foot into a shoe, and I'm white.
I guess those are coming from different points of view. But even walking down the street, as we saw you guys relate in that scene from the film, you saw different things. Wouldn't that be inevitable that because of the different backgrounds you come from?
It would be, the whole thing, the whole part of the project was for him to be receptive to it and not to try to block everything. If you're walking down the street and you are trying to see it from the black perspective and you still have your white perspective underneath the black makeup, then what good are you doing?
Let me ask you both. This was like a 6-week intense experience. What did you tell your families, your friends back in Atlanta, Brian Sparks, that you were doing?
I just told them that I was doing a documentary about race. We could say that much, but we really couldn't go into detail. So, they respected my wishes that once I said that, I had like a $6 million lawsuit over my head saying that I could not talk about the project.
Mm-hmm.
So they respected the wishes on that and just waited to see what the turnout would be.
And Bruno Marcatulli, this was in your hometown, Los Angeles.
It was.
Yeah. You might have run into some of your friends and family.
At one time I saw Rose's sister on the street, and I spoke to her and she did not know who I was. But Neil, I'd like to, just comment on the last comment that Brian made where mm-hmm. I was not receptive to,
sure.
the black experience. The show is black, white. And I believe that Brian never even considered, the white point of view and that there is racism from black to white as well. And it doesn't seem to be brought out in all the interviews that we're doing. It's not about the black perspective. It's about both ways, and that isn't being addressed and should be.
Brian?
So, Bruno, did you share any of your perspective from when you were black or even when you were not white that blacks have done to you? Are you sharing any of that? If you don't share it, then the world is not going to know.
I don't understand.
I shared my experience. If I felt racism, by the guy in the bar saying that he wanted his neighborhood to stay white, or the guy saying that, hey, my parents taught me to wash my hands. If you guys would come back and share those thoughts and your sentiments that you had on that, we would have maybe a different perspective. But
I'd be glad to. I've never in my life, any white person I've known have ever said any of those things. They chose very carefully two people. They've interviewed many more than those two people, but those are the two clips, obviously, to create controversy, and those are the ones they chose to have on the show. But I've never been around white people that wiped their hands after shaking black people's hands or felt that their neighborhood should not. I live in Los Angeles, and it's a very diverse community, and that's the community I have spent my 47 years in.
Well, let me let you respond to this, then. Rose went out into the world as a black girl, and she went in Santa Monica, where you guys currently reside, and went to a store that she frequents as a white girl, asked for an application, and they denied her application.
Job application, yeah.
Job application. Carmen, you and Carmen went to a cowboy bar, black, and Carmen asked for a cup of coffee, and they told her she could not have coffee unless she left a credit card. Now, what do you feel about that? How's your perception of that? And Carmen, underneath the black makeup, is white, so I'm quite sure she went out with a very chipper attitude, since you say it's what you put out, mm-hmm. you get back. Did she ask for the coffee negatively? Did Rose ask for the application negatively for them to get that kind of feedback? So, you know, what would you say to that?
I'd say I never deny that racism exists.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and we'll start with David. David's calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you... Hi, David.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a 44-year-old African-American. I've lived in mostly Midwestern, predominantly white communities, and I do... There's no doubt that racism exists today. I've experienced through my life a lot of different forms of racism. But I have to agree with Bruno that regardless of the state of America, that there is so much racism, but African Americans, at least for myself, it's unhealthy for me to go through life, you know, to sort of, you know, to have a feeling that, you know, racism is everywhere. I try to a lot of extent to try to be as positive as I can, and I do certainly address or confront racism if I see it, but I try to be as positive as I can, and also sometimes I ignore racism. But I guess what I'm saying is just unhealthy for African Americans to sort of feel like that they have to fight racism at every corner, or that it exists out there to the point that it has to change our way that we deal with people in the community.
I'm going to get a response from you both, but we're up against the break. So, David, can you stay on the line with us?
Yes.
All right, I'll put you on hold, and we'll get a response from both Bruno Marcatulli and Brian Sparks when we come back from a short break. We're talking about the new FX series Black White. Coming up, we'll also be joined by a man who went through the same experience for a BBC series several years ago, and we'll talk with Black White executive producer Matt Alvarez. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about a new FX series called Black White. Two families trade races and experience life into each other's skins. If you have questions about what it was like, what they learned, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. If you'd like to see photos of the families in the FX series Black White, you can visit our website at npr.org and follow the links to Talk of the Nation. Our guests are the two fathers of the families, Bruno Marcatulli and Brian Sparks. And when we went to the break, David, who was on the line with us from Phoenix, Arizona, talking about, in a sense, he was saying that Bruno, he thought, had a point. I guess, Brian, the first response from you.
My response would be to David's comments is that, you know, first, I don't go through life, you know, wondering about racism or letting it hinder me. I knew coming up that I had to be bigger, faster, stronger, better. So I look at it as a positive. Okay, now I'm better, stronger, and faster. But it was just for the project that pretty much that we were pointing it out so poignantly so Bruno can understand what we go through on a daily. So it would never hinder me in my life, and I put out a very positive attitude in everything I do in life. But life doesn't always turn back the positivity that I put into it.
Mm-hmm. And Bruno?
Life doesn't turn out the way anybody wants it. In a nutshell, whoever you are, whatever skin color you have, whatever your predicament in life is, you have two options. One is to look at life with the brightest and most positive attitude and empower yourself, or be angry and negative and look for things so that you can excuse your problem, blame your problems on something else. And that is disempowering and stagnating. Mm-hmm. So in a nutshell, again, there is racism, but a lot has to do with how you approach life.
David, I wonder what you think.
Well, you know, I guess I agree with both men, but I do feel like that in Bruno's tone that there is a certain level of denial that somehow he's not responsible for it, and that to a certain extent that he's willing to dismiss, you know, the things that maybe he knows goes on because he's not somehow responsible. But I think for most African Americans, we believe that's part of the problem, that so often people say, hey, I'm not prejudiced, and so therefore they figured that, you know, the life should be, you know, just as peachy and rosy as it is for me. But I think that, you know, I think this exercise hopefully was the ideal of putting yourself in someone else's shoes. And I don't think he's done that. I don't think Bruno's done that. I think he's still sort of, you know, looking at it from his perspective.
Might want to take a look at the documentary before you make that judgment anyway, David. But thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
In 2002, the BBC produced a documentary much along the lines of Black White. It was called Trading Races, a white man and a black man, with the help of makeup and prosthetics, changed skin color. One of them was Andrew Daniel, a black hairdresser from London. As part of his experience as a white man, Daniel marched with the National Front, a group known for its fierce opposition to immigration and Britain's multicultural policies. Andrew Daniel joins us now from the studios of the BBC in London, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you. It's nice to be invited.
What made you decide to do this?
I've always been interested in racial balances and power balances and that kind of stuff for many, many years, and the opportunity came, and I wanted just to reinforce some of my own ideas and to see if they were to test my own prejudgments and to see if it is the way I perceive it to be.
And how did it turn out?
There were many different opportunities, but several times, going back to a couple of one of your guests was talking about, that I went into a few situations with pre-expectations, and I was shocked to find that it wasn't like that. I did the same thing, for example, as the white character first, went into a situation which I thought would be racist and be, you know, that kind of vibe. I then went back to exactly the same scenario 3 months later as myself, met the same group of people, and they were equally as nice to me as they were as I was a white person, and I thought they were going to be negative towards me.
So, in a way, did you find out that it was mattered more about individuals than about races?
There were different things. Some of the points, exactly as you say, it was about individual characters and how your energy is as a person. But it did also reconfirm that there is definite racism out there, and it is very. We are treated differently, and there are very subtle, very, very subtle things that happen that a lot of...
Give me a for instance.
For instance, I'm black and I went white. The other chap was white and he went black. Mm-hmm. And there's an old thing in London that it's when you go to a shop, you get served by somebody. They put the change... When you're black, you find that they very rarely put the change back into your hand and give you eye contact. And I'm used to this. This is something I've grown up with. And people, if you said to white people, they go, "Don't be silly, don't be silly." This chap went black, and he went to his local shop that he's going to for years and years. And the woman is really lovely. He said, "Little old lady, beautiful." He went there, purchased something. As a black character, he slammed it on the table, gave him no eye contact, and he was devastated. It's the first time you realise those subtle little differences between the races and how you're treated and how that can build up in your mind and give you that inferior complex. Mm-hmm. And it's very subtle things.
Speaking of unsubtle things, what was it like to march as a white man with the National Front?
Well, that just confirmed everything. But what it did, it was excellent, actually, because it made me not dislike them anymore. Because I went in there thinking this group of people were quite intelligent and organised and had their thing together. And actually walking amongst them made me feel sorry for them. Made me actually feel pitiful. Because you hear their conversations and the level of their IQ, you know, the things they spoke about, how they spoke about it and their reasoning. I actually left that march not hating the National Front at all. I was actually sympathetic and thought they need to be educated and they need to go back to school and learn something.
I know you've been to the United States before to discuss your experiences during Trading Races. Do you find that there's a difference in racial politics in this country compared with the UK?
Definitely, definitely. I think that's just a historical thing. Yeah. Because, you know, because of slavery was actually in America, and you've got a history there that is actually in America. Blacks have been there for a long time under different circumstances, and the circumstances have changed over the generations. And for the whites, I think they found that harder to embrace that change. Where in England, most Afro-Caribbean people that are here now came through the 50s and 60s, and they came, you know. So it's a different relationship. That long-term history is not there. And I think that's what makes a difference.
You've had now 4 years to reflect on this experience. Did Trading Races affect your life?
Yeah, definitely. It made me more objective, made me more less likely to judge other people en masse, and no more, I used to be... I think not racist, but, you know, as we all are, we do judge groups of people sometimes subconsciously, and I've actually consciously fought against that now. and I no longer speak in generals. I try to keep it down to individuals.
Hmm. Andrew Daniel, thanks very much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Andrew Daniel was a participant in the BBC series Trading Races, and he joined us from the BBC studios in London. And Bruno and Brian, as we bring you back in from our bureau in New York, did you get a chance to see any of that series before you guys started out?
I didn't.
I didn't either.
Might have been instructive. I don't know. What I also have to ask, as I understand, getting the makeup on was something of an ordeal.
About a four and a half hour process.
Uh-huh. And getting it off isn't easy either.
That was about a 45-minute process for me.
Uh-huh. And I assume just about the same for you, Bruno.
That's correct.
Yeah. You must have gotten to know the makeup artists pretty well.
They were great. Yeah. I had a lot of fun with the makeup artists.
And I understand they followed you in a van wherever you were, whenever you were out, in case the wig slipped or something.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yeah. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Tracy, and Tracy's with us from North Augustus in South Carolina.
Yes. How you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I've seen parts of this, the promo to the show, and I don't think that you can just step into some another color skin for a little while and really encompass what it is to be that individual, whatever color you are, because there are a lot of things that we inherit, good and bad, being black and being white. You know, for instance, I was watching a show once, and they were talking about during slavery, that how when the families were separated, that how the family, when another slave came and encountered another slave child, then they would take them on as theirs, and they would say, "This is my son or my daughter." And then I thought about it, and I was like, you know, maybe even years later, maybe that's why when black people, when we see each other, sometimes we do say, you know, hey, what's, you know, it was like, hey, brother, we have a, mm-hmm. we feel a kinship to each other, because even though we are been in this land a while, sometimes we still feel like we are in a foreign land, or not that we're in a foreign land, but we're foreign to our surrounding.
That old line, stranger in a strange land. Let me ask you both, can you get at least a glimpse of an idea of what it's like to be the other race? Bruno, you first?
Absolutely. And the color has a great point. I was in, black makeup for 5 weeks. And truly, I mean, what do I know about being a black man? It'd be ridiculous for me to claim that I know what it is to be a black man.
Yeah, we weren't trying to, put out there that you're going to know exactly how it is to, be in the other walk of life, the other skin. We were just pretty much touching on a glimpse of what it's like. I can never be white because I'm black. He can never be black because he's white. But it was just to get a glimpse or a taste of what the other races go through.
Trace?
Because I heard one of the characters say, she wanted to, when she was being white, she wanted to feel like what it would be to have an easy life for a while. I don't think that white people or black people have an easy life. I do think that racism makes some things interact different in our lives, and people need to acknowledge the racism and not necessarily think that, oh, white people have it so much easier and black people have it so this way. Just because I'm black, I should be able to dance good, I play basketball, and just because you're white, you ought to be able to do whatever it is white people are supposed to be good at doing. That's not true, you know. Because I'm black and I can't dance. I don't dance. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing you won't catch me trying to do. And I think that it was a show, and when you take a few minutes of something, you can't really grasp what it's all about. And I don't feel the white guy, I don't feel like, you know, some of the things that he did not recognize or acknowledge, I don't feel like he needed, you know, I don't feel bad toward him about it. The same thing for the black guy. But it would have been good if both could have approached it, trying to find out what it would be like, you know, to not saying, oh, see what I go through, but try to encompass maybe a little bit more what it may be like, that color. Because Mulatto's...
Tracy, I suggest you watch the TV show itself to find out a little bit more about what they actually found out.
So. I sure will.
All right.
Sure.
But he makes a great point. And, I got to say that this is Bruno, by the way,
yes.
Coming away from the show, much more aware of the fact that both sides really have to take that moment to at least for to consider what it is to walk in the other's shoes, no matter how difficult it may be, to just try to go there and definitely have that compassion.
Tracy, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Our guests are Bruno Marco Tulli and Brian Sparks. They are the stars, or two of the stars, of the new FX series Black White, which debuts tomorrow night. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. Let's bring another person into the conversation. Joining us now from his office in Los Angeles is Matt Alvarez, executive producer of Black White, and it's good to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And how did you choose who would the participants would be?
Well, you know, we were kind of brought into the show. John Landgraf, you know, had from FX had kind of come up with the idea of doing a show that explored, you know, kind of the territory that this show eventually explored. And he then brought it to R.J. Cutler, who's, you know, one of the other executive producers on the show.
Documentary director of The War Room, among other things.
Award-winning, you know, documentarian. And then they came to us. Now, they had already done a little, you know, some casting and had explored, you know, some of the makeup by the time they came to us with this idea and said, hey, here's the show that we want to do. Would you guys like to be a part of it? And we were really excited about it. At that point, you know, both families were already chosen, and we just kind of rolled with who was already there. But it was a long casting process. I mean, saw thousands of families, you know, took quite a period of time, worked with the makeup artist, Captive Audience, and Brian Sipe over there, and doing some of the casting just to, you know, really make sure that we were dealing with people who had, you know, skin tones and whatnot that would actually, you know, make the transformation.
They had to be able to look good in the other race's colors.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, some of the scenes are obviously filmed with hidden cameras, scenes of shopping in various malls and going for that job application, for example. Others are not. And, for example, Brian, as a white man, gets a job as a bartender. There's a full camera crew in there. How are those scenes arranged?
I mean, you know, we kind of went into the situation telling, you know, and talked with different, you know, shop owners and whatnot, and told them that we were, you know, really doing a documentary on people moving to Los Angeles and their new experiences in this city. So we kind of went into it that way, you know, to try and get as real of a response from people as we could.
Mm-hmm. And when Rose goes into a poetry class made up of African-American kids, as I understand it, the two people who run the class did know what was going on.
Yeah, we definitely had them in as part of the loop and, you know, kind of, you know, they were very helpful to us in terms of integrating into, you know, the community. And for Rose, integrating into this class and being very supportive of her and her endeavors.
Yeah, but during the TV show, we're not told that they know it. It looks like she's putting it over on them, too.
Well, you know, we have, you know, a lot of footage. You know, we shot a lot of things, and you know, we had to make conscious decisions on what to show. We have, you know, over 2,400 hours worth of footage. And you know, in this show, we aren't claiming this is a documentary. You know, what we're trying to show, though, is an accurate portrayal of what these people went through as they were made up, you know, as these other individuals. So I think the show definitely reflects a very accurate portrayal of what their experiences were.
Mm-hmm. You guys have now seen the show, Bruno and Brian. Do you think it's an accurate reflection of what you went through?
I think it's very accurate.
And Bruno?
Yes, for the most part, it is accurate. There are some things that were left out. They had to build characters, and as much as they could define those characters, so to give each character an arc. But for the most part, it was true to form.
And you went into this agreeing to some form of manipulation, I guess. Did you feel unduly manipulated?
No. I understand that, you know, it's show business. And like I say, for the most part, it is truthful. So yeah. I understand the nature of the beast.
And I felt it captured my views and thoughts.
And one other question just before we go to the break to you two. During the project, were you looking at the footage that was being shot during the project?
No.
No.
So you didn't see any of this until afterwards?
That's
exactly.
Correct.
Okay. Stay with us. We're going to take a short break and come back with more of your calls. Our guests are Bruno Marcotulli and Brian Sparks. Also with us, Matt Alvarez, who's the executive producer of Black White. The series debuts tomorrow night on FX, the cable TV network. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Also, when we return, we'll remember Hall of Famer Kirby Puckett. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we'll talk about Black White, a controversial new show that attempts to explore the complexities of race relations through reality television. The series allowed two families to trade races using state-of-the-art makeup effects. In one scene, Brian Sparks, an African-American man, is made up as a white man and gets a job as a bartender in a sports bar in a largely all-white enclave.
Today will be the first day that I'll work at Leo's bar.
It's a little all-white bar.
As a bartender.
It's cool. I'm being the fly on the wall. Get to see a day in white.
Oh, you want to establish a rapport with all these guys. If you take care of them, they're going to take care of you.
I have to speak proper grammar, or as the black community say, I have to speak white.
Yes, see? Okay, I'm about to watch you. You
must be a real regular, right?
Then I got into some conversation with a guy.
There you go.
It was so easy because they thought I was so white up in there. I just asked him a simple question. What is the neighborhood like?
Yeah, this is pretty much a white area, so you don't have any problems.
Okay, fit right in.
I grew up in this neighborhood, and this is one of the last somewhat unaffected bastions of middle-class Caucasian America inside Los Angeles.
Nice quiet
community. Most of the cities around this area have changed significantly. This is the one that's almost like it's been insulated for some reason.
Wow. I kind of got that feel when I came through this neighborhood.
And the neighbors wanted to stay that way.
Exactly.
They don't want a lot of change. They don't want a lot of building. They don't want a lot of immigration because they've seen what's happened in the peripheral communities. And it's taken the quality of life down.
That Brian Sparks from the program Black White. Also with us still is Bruno Marcotulli, who is the white father in the program. You keep getting confused by these these things in reality TV. Also executive producer Matt Alvarez. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And here's an email question for you, Matt Alvarez, from Poncho in Kansas City. Do you believe that with the recent tidal wave of staged reality shows on the air, that this program will be seen as only staged entertainment as opposed to a learning experience?
Well, you know, obviously you always have those concerns. You know, we try to, you know, kind of position the show and to market the show so that people, you know, would see that there's no prize at the end of the tunnel. There's none of those things that you typically see in these reality shows, so that we, you know, tried to set ours apart from, you know, the other ones out there. And you know, I think that, you know, once people have started having dialogue, they'll see that it's a little bit different.
Hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. Tom's with us from Louisville, Kentucky.
That's correct.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I was just making the point. Sounds like a great show, by the way. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I work for an African-American-owned company, and I'm a Caucasian myself, white guy. And when I first started working for them about 4 years ago, and it's actually a media company, and the one thing I found when I started working for them is that I working for the company was that I really had to start. I had to make it a point to fit in. If I wanted to be a part of the company, if I wanted to get along with everybody, I wasn't going to be automatically accepted. And I think that's a lot of the situations. It's more of a cultural thing, not necessarily black or white or Hispanic or whatever, but it's a very cultural thing that if you aren't aware of it, if it's something that you don't feel like you belong, that can be a big stigma.
Brian, let me ask you about that. It's a point that members of your family make repeatedly in the film, that it's the constant pressure of trying to be being black and trying to fit in with a majority white society.
That's correct. You know, blacks every day that we have to fit into white society because this is white America. And so it's you know, it's something that we have to have grown to do daily. So it's, you know, it's accepted already for us in America. We know that we have to fit in, you know, because of that.
So. Mm-hmm. Bruno, I wondered about your take on this.
Neil, I'm the son of an immigrant who came from Italy. And growing up, I was around a dinner table with people from all over the world that came from America and had to adjust to the American way of life, not the white way of life. And so I just come from a different perspective on that.
Hmm. Well, let me shed a little light on Bruno's perspective of that. Bruno is a son of an immigrant, but the day that his parents stepped into America, they had more rights than my parents who was born here. And that's the big difference.
Wow. That's quite a statement, Brian, considering
it's true.
Well, back it up with
well,
with
when
something.
When your parents came here, there was not a water fountain that said colored, whites, and immigrants. That was either you were either colored, you drank out the colored water fountain, or you were white, you drank out the white. If you're white, you can drink out of it, whether you're an immigrant or whatever. If there was not a restaurant where whites and immigrants or blacks and immigrants had to go in the back door. If you were white, you went in the front door, whether you were an immigrant or not. So when he got here, he already had a status of being white to fit into white culture. So he already had a leg up on society over the black race.
No, he came to New York and there were no separate bathrooms and no separate water fountains. And then he moved to California with my mother. To Los Angeles, and there were no white water fountains, and there were no, you know, whatever you just said. And he didn't speak English, and he had 5 jobs, and he worked his ass off, and he became a success. And he never used all the hurdles that he had to jump over as excuses. And that forms my opinion on life.
The bottom line, when he came here, no matter where he came here white. So when the minute he stepped into
he's
our
Italian.
Country.
Is that white, too? Is every you know...
When
he's brown.
Once he
that?
Get into America, he's white.
Tempted to rush in here and ask if you two just can't get along.
Yeah, I mean, one of the fundamental differences, though, is, you know, Bruno, your father came over here, I would assume. Now, I don't know much about your father, but my assumption would be that he came over here willingly to make a better life for himself, whereas the descendants of Brian's family, not his parents per se, but... You know, when his family did come over here to the United States, they were brought over here unwillingly.
His ancestors, not his descendants, but we get your point, Tom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
I don't know about Brian's parents. Brian, did your ancestors come over here unwillingly?
My parents are black, so the ancestry, yes. You know, back in great-grandparents' slavery days, I'm quite yeah, they were either born here or originally brought here from... You know,
because
start out.
I would imagine a lot of blacks come to the to America, the land of opportunity, quite willingly.
Mm. And an increasing percentage. But
definitely
yeah.
increasing percentage.
Yeah. Let's get another caller on the line before we have to go. And let's go to John. John's calling from Roseville in California.
Yes. Hello, all.
Hey.
Hello.
What a wonderful subject. And I'm so happy to see this is becoming out in the forefront. You know, I think that there are those people that are fixated on color. I personally am a lighter pigmented human being, but I take no, I mean, it's almost like sometimes I feel ashamed to be white, classified white. You know, I think when society becomes aware of how human nature is so completely influenced our past and present interracial relations, that society will be able to realize that no one race is to blame for what ails another race. Only then will society be able to understand that racial disparity is a product of human nature and was absolutely unavoidable. Now, I must admit that there were indiscretions suffered by the black people.
Indiscretions?
I mean, suffering. Plain and simple, just ignorance that the white men did to the black men. That's past. Today, let's get beyond it.
All right, John. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Well, can I respond to John?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I respond to John?
Majority class.
Go ahead.
John, how can we really get past? I mean, of course we would like to move on and get past, but the things that I think that America is forgetting to realize that black from black to black, generation after generation, nothing has been passed on. From white to white, from slavery, the power, the money, that comes from generation to generation. So the things that my ancestry had to go through, just passed on nothing. But the white generation, since the black built the America on their back, everything is passed on through white. So it's hard to get past and just get over. We do need to heal. I will agree to that. But the biggest thing we need to realize that we're all different. We're all different, and yet we're all the same. Yes, I'm black. Yes, Bruno is white. But we're all the same.
And I think we're going to leave it there. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
Bruno Marco Tulli and Brian Sparks are participants in the program Black White. That airs tomorrow night, beginning tomorrow night, on the FX network. We also spoke with Matt Alvarez, who is executive producer of the program, along with Ice Cube and R.J. Cutler. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.